today?
Yes. Thanks for putting the comment first. I overdressed.
You did overdress.
I didn't get the memo.
Shocked. Yeah. Trying to.
So thank everybody for being here and on the live stream. I'm Chris Catalago, Politico's editorial director in California, and thank you for joining us.
Good to be with you. Good to be here.
So we'll just get right into it. Last summer, folks were writing your political obituary.
Luckily, I don't read obituaries, so I missed it.
During the, I think we were calling it Brat Summer for Kamala Harris. And then in this year alone, you faced the most expensive natural disaster in U.S. history and then had the major city in your state militarized by the federal government.
Yeah.
Did people underestimate you?
Well, I don't know about that, but I'll leave that to more objective minds, and I'll move the mic down a little bit. But it's been a hell of a year. Been a hell of a half decade. All that stacking of stress, all the anxiety that all of us have faced as we work through a pandemic, as we work through social unrest, as we sort of unwind so much of what we took for granted as it relates to the global economy and supply chains. And then, of course, Trump 2.0, depending on which side of the aisle you're on, impacts the immune system. And of course, what happened in January was extraordinary. It happened in the middle of winter. One of the largest and most devastating wildfires in U.S. history. Fire attached to 100-mile-an-hour winds. Two extraordinarily large fires damaging communities in Altadena and Palisades, and dozens of other fires which we seem to forget about in and around the region in Southern California. If that wasn't enough, to your point, we saw something unprecedented in modern American history, and that is the President of the United States that federalized the National Guard and did something he never did in his first term. He never sent the military overseas. He sent the military to the United States of America. He sent 700 active duty members of the Marines to the second largest city in the United States of America. Nothing about that is normal, and nothing about that should be normalized. He also threatened the American people who happen to live in California that he wouldn't provide aid. He conditioned the aid at a time, disaster, in the middle of the disaster, didn't even wait until the fire was suppressed, to threaten the American people that happen to live in the state of California if we, quote unquote, didn't do his bidding. It is a hell of a time in American history.
How's that impacted on you, though? Going back to the original question.
It's made me more resolved, even more focused. I didn't hear much of that last panel, but I did hear Jim mention the recall. That's pretty clarifying, a lot of finality in that, a lot of humility in that, you don't come out of a recall campaign the same. I came into that recall campaign still arguing that all politics is local. I still had a romantic notion of that. I intellectualized that a lot of our politics and the discourse was national. I didn't fully appreciate how nationalized our politics had become. In so many ways, that shape-shifted a lot of what we're doing and who I am today. But this last year, these last 6-7 months, this is something altogether different. And I'm on the other side of any kind of hesitancy that I had prior. I'm on the other side of giving a damn about people's feelings about this moment. I will express myself more clearly and more concisely, because I see the threats in very vivid terms in ways I never saw before. And I see the consequences of not just those threats from the administration, but the actions of this administration, more perhaps than any other governor in the United States, because I've seen the damage firsthand to communities, this economy, our reputation, to our allies, the world we're trying to build. This is simply the most destructive and damaging individual in my lifetime that happens to be the President of the United States, and I need to be held to a higher level of accountability as governor. So in every way, shape, or way, I have changed, and I also, as a father, as a caregiver, recognize that ultimate judgment will come from them. and even myself when I'm done, I have to meet this moment. And so, yeah, this has been very clarifying. It's been very sobering. And in many ways, I've changed.
So the open hand, not a closed fist, that's out the window now?
No, always. But I've always maintained that. You know,
how do you maintain that?
The same way that I, you know, celebrate the best of this nation by making the point that anyone who tries to condition or suggest we should condition aid to deal with those that were lost their lives and the devastation of the floods in Texas should be ashamed of themselves. I mean, I was proud to send on your behalf, our behalf, search and rescue teams to Texas. Proud of the fact my tax dollars went to Speaker Johnson's district in Louisiana. Proud that this country steps up in times of emergency and crisis. Proud of the fact we're there providing mutual aid for firefighters, not just across the United States, but increasingly across the globe. Proud of the fact that we recognize that we're all in this together and we're all better off. And so, no, always an open hand, not a closed fist. But, you know, you're going to come after our folks. You know, you're going to throw a United States senator on the ground, handcuff him. You know, some kid who's trying to go to the grocery store with his dog who's scared to death to walk his dog to the grocery store because he doesn't look like you and me, looks like Senator Padilla. The hell is that? That's Donald Trump's America. And so, yeah, I sure as hell will have a closed fist and push back against those authoritarian tendencies any day of the week.
After what you faced in California, Trump's now militarizing Washington, D.C. and escalating these threats in cities like Chicago and Baltimore.
Yeah.
You saw this firsthand in L.A. What do you know about the military coming into a city or a state that they may not know yet?
Well, this is exactly what we said was going to happen. Rewind the tapes. We made this crystal clear. This is a preview of things to come. Let me add to that. Just 10 or so days ago, I don't know if Jim brought it up, but when we announced this campaign on the redistricting, we did so at the Democracy Center, Little Tokyo, the site, quite literally the sacred site where we were, United States of America and California, was interning the Japanese. At the exact moment, two U.S. senators, members of the Congress, hundreds of members, leaders in our community that were assembled at that exact same moment, Donald Trump sent masked men to the event, ICE and Border Patrol, primarily the Border Patrol, to intimidate folks. Poor guy was selling strawberries, was arrested. I imagine he must have been on the most wanted list, dangerous felon. Disappeared. That is a preview of things to come. Don't think for a second he's going to stop in the National Guard. It's an interesting fact. 4,000 National Guard were federalized, over 700 members of the United States Marine. 95% of them did nothing. They sat there looking for things to do. Hundreds plus million dollars wasted. Literally looking for an assignment. They were taken off the beat. These are police officers, your National Guard. These are firefighters. These are teachers. These are caregivers. They were taken off the streets doing real work to keep you safe and protected, to keep you healthy. And they sat there in the armory looking for something to do. He will send the National Guard. He will send them all across this country, and he will do so through Election Day. And if you think I'm exaggerating, consider the fact that as he demobilized our National Guard, he kept hundreds of them through Election Day. And he'll do so working in concert, as he has, with ICE and Border Patrol to do the same. You have the largest private police force in the world. When they're done with this, all that funding and that big, beautiful betrayal allows more resources for this private police force that increasingly is showing a tendency not to swear an oath to the Constitution, but to the President of the United States. And he'll be sending them to voting booths and polling places all across this country. This is a real and serious moment in U.S. history. And by the way, I say that as an American, not as a Democrat. Every Republican should be ashamed about this and scared to death about not just these authoritarian tendencies, but these authoritarian actions by the president. He is weak. He's weakness masquerading as strength. And that makes him more dangerous than most people believe.
Along those lines, he's said in the last few days, said well before that, he wants to end mail-in balloting. You've talked about your own concern about these efforts to suppress the vote, either before an election and after an election. What are you doing about this November? Your plans to counter that, whether it's, you know, actions taken around the Postal Service or any of the other actions around this election?
As you know, mail-in balloting happens in red states, blue states, predominant means of which people exercise their fundamental rights. In states like Utah, not just states like California, 80% of you voted by mail in the last election. It was 82 and 86 in the previous elections. So it's overwhelmingly utilized. It's unbelievably safe in the context of being secure, barcodes, signature verifications, process that is well defined and has been well studied and researched. He doesn't want more people voting. He wants to suppress and chill the vote. He also said he wanted to go after certain ballot machines. And by the way, I'll remind you where he got this advice, or at least he asserted he got the advice, after literally, not figuratively, this is not pejorative, putting out the red carpet to Putin. Putin apparently gave him this advice. Putin suggested to him, you know, sir, you know, as a, you know, I mean, Putin is the master of independent, fair elections, and sort of offered up some sage advice, apparently. And Trump said, my gosh, thank you, Mr. President Putin. We need to end this. I mean, pay attention, folks. This guy is not screwing around. Ask this board chair. Ask Senator Schiff. Ask what's happening. I mean, come on. You can't find Paxton? Oh, no. What? Who's he? Mortgages? IRS? I mean, wake up. We're losing this country in real time. This is not bloviation. This is not exaggeration. It's happening. You don't get a do-over. 249 years, those enduring values, best of Roman Republic, Greek democracy, co-equal branches of government, popular sovereignty. The rule of law is being replaced with the rule of done, period, full stop. And so we have to assert ourselves with more clarity and conviction. That's why, with respect, that last panel was so important. That's what Prop 50 represents, a response to that. We are not bystanders, and we have to shape the future by asserting ourselves.
So how do you make sure that that's a, you know, free and fair election if you believe that these are real threats?
Well, we're going to do
just coming up in this November. What are you going to do?
Same thing we've been doing, Chris. Look, I mean, we've been involved in over 40 lawsuits. By the way, one of the most important lawsuits that needs to get more attention, and I hope it will get the attention it deserves when Justice Breyer adjudicates the facts. But just a few weeks ago, we deposed members of the Border Patrol. We deposed members of the military, General Sherman, among others, under oath in federal court on posse comitatus. All of what you just described accurately about what Trump is asserting now with an executive order and a strike force to move the military into American cities is a threat on the basis of, again, the rule of law. We count on the courts. We count on this thing called the Constitution. And we count on judges to adjudicate the facts fairly. Any day, any hour, Justice Breyer will come out with a first posse comitatus decision. It will have profound and far-reaching impacts. We're still waiting for the appellate court decision as it relates to the illegal tariffs. And the fact that your backpacks cost more, and pencils cost more, and paper costs more for school. This is a guy who's going to ruin your Christmas. With the tax on all the toys coming in the next few months, these tariffs, these illegal tariffs, he has no right, legal right, under the Independent Emergency Powers Act to advance that. We're counting on the courts. You asked how?
Yeah.
We count on the courts. You can't count on Speaker Johnson. He has disappeared. He has completely failed in his role and responsibility as Speaker. What an embarrassment he is. What an abject failure. He continues to be, and I dare say, with respect to Speaker Johnson, He may want to invite the National Guard into Shreveport, Louisiana, that has 6 times the murder rate as Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco. If you want to take care of the carnage in this country, Mr. President, look to the red states, 8 of the top 10 murder states in America, all red states. Look at the carnage in places like Shreveport, Louisiana. It's not about any of that. It is about a dominant, it's about aggression, and it's about authoritarianism and tendencies. And my son said this. My 9-year-old, God is my witness, Dutch is sitting there watching the president and say, why does he keep saying he's a dictator? People that keep saying things like that actually might be a dictator. And he then went on to say, why don't we watch YouTube? And wanted to go on a game.
What do you guys watch on YouTube?
That's a whole nother. We watch other people watching Minecraft. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation. Yeah, I need a drink, not a, some water.
I'm going to quickly change topics before getting back to Trump. But you've been pretty vocal about this $1 billion settlement offer that Trump has made to UCLA.
The extortion.
And, called it a shakedown. Yeah. You referred to him as the Don, mafia-like figure.
Yeah. I didn't, did we? Good.
Yeah. So how are you going to stop that? I mean, we see folks entertaining a settlement.
It sickens me to the core. You know, all for one for all, or whatever. I mean, Intel. I mean, this is a guy. I love these guys. Hey, Sean Hannity, you watching? You're so disgusted, Laura. So sickened by Mandani talking about, you know, socializing a bodega or something or a grocery store. And here you are, Intel. You just socialize and nationalize Intel. You got your guy Howard Letnick, the great Letnick, who's out there talking about nationalizing people that do business in this country, the Pentagon, Lockheed.
But this is a decision of the regents. I mean, in the UC, this is not.
Well, I'm a member.
It's not Hannity or Letnick.
No, it's about this moment, and it's about people standing tall. It's about making the case to those members.
How do you exert your influence?
A moral authority, not just formal authority. I have a little formal authority too. I'm a member of that body.
Yeah.
I also help fund it.
Yeah.
And I also believe public institutions. I believe this UC system, which has over 13,800 active patents, more than any other system in the world. It's the reason we have more scientists, engineers, more researchers, more Nobel laureates coming out of this. It's the reason we're the tentpole of the U.S. economy. It's the reason America's the tentpole of the world economy. It's because of our research institutions. This guy will take anything down. And he's trying to shut them down. I mean, a $1 billion fine to UCLA shuts them down. Shuts down one of the finest research institutions in the world. But it's consistent pattern. Any institution that cultivates individual or independent thinking is under assault.
But are you going to stop?
And we're going to do everything in our power to stop folks from selling out. The Smithsonian needs to assert themselves. He's rewriting history, censoring historical facts. It's happening in real time. He's cutting institutions of knowledge from libraries. He's cutting NIH funds, not just, again, at UCLA. And yes, you know what I said, and I'll stand by what I say. That's the answer to the question, but I'm affirming a broader construct.
Yeah.
It's not just about UCLA. It's about anybody or any institution that disagrees with them. And so how could you possibly accept the fine? Fine for what? The guy who had dinner with Nick Fuentes telling us about anti-Semitism? Are you kidding me? The guy who countenanced anti-Semitism in both his last campaigns? I could give you chapter and verse on that. Lecturing us? You saw, I mean, you just saw California came out leading the nation in terms of our response to anti-Semitism. It's a point of pride. It sickens me to my core. And I'll remind you, I'm one of the governors that visited Israel right after October 7th. Not only visited Israel, we also went there with a field hospital, also to not only protect and address the issues of Israel, but also to address the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. We did that. My point is, I'm not taking a backseat to anybody on that, and I sure as hell ain't going to listen to Donald Trump. It's a false pretense. And by the way, Jewish Caucus and others had the guts to finally pushing back, saying, how dare you use us for this assault on independent thinking? And so, no, the regents need to do the right thing. That said, I get it. They're all scared. Everyone's scared. That's why they sold out. at Columbia. I mean, if you heard the President of the United States at the cabinet meeting, looking over, they were laughing. They were laughing as he looked over and he said, "You're not going to negotiate with Harvard. You think he's going to negotiate with us?" When he was mocking Harvard, that's sitting on $53 billion endowment, and they're talking about selling out with $500 million. So look, you know, there's a pathway to get a deal that means nothing and has the form and substance of fog, fine. But the minute we sell our souls or sell out our values, that ain't going to happen on
so
my
no money.
For what? Yeah. What did we do?
I got it.
Just stop the if Joe Biden came in and said, "I want $1 billion, for what? You wouldn't, no one even asked the question. They say, "What about this? Is outrageous. It's reckless." Joe Biden tried to nationalize Intel. If Joe Biden did a deal to send H2O chips to China and take 15% tithing like they did at NVIDIA and AMD, people would be outraged. Are you kidding me?
All right, I'm going to change topics again.
No, wake up, everybody. Wake up, everybody.
Including Sean Hannity, who may or may not.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, Sean's very sensitive.
So you debated on with, with
Fox
Sean.
Is sensitive. Very sad. We put a little mirror up to them.
I saw that.
They are so situationally unaware.
I'm going to get to that.
One
later.
We'll talk about their deal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm going to get
chatbots for Trump. Chatbots.
Yeah. So you debated Ron DeSantis on Fox. Would you debate Arnold Schwarzenegger on Prop 50?
I know. I have no interest in that.
No way. What about?
Because that's for you. It doesn't serve the public in any meaningful way. It's theater.
Why wouldn't it serve the public?
Because I don't think I'd.
What about Donald Trump? What if he would debate you on Prop 50?
Debate on Prop 50. Come on. I'm really proud of this in this respect. Prop 50. It's temporary. We maintain the Independent Redistricting Commission. By the way, as someone who has receipts supporting independent redistricting, opposed as mayor of San Francisco, one of the few Democrats in the state that publicly opposed the repeal of independent redistricting, we maintain the Independent Redistricting Commission, except for a temporary period, just for congressional seats, to respond to this unprecedented assault by Donald Trump to try to rig the next election in response for the 26, 28, and 30 elections. It reverts back to its original form. We affirm our support for national independent redistricting, and we do it in the most there's never been a state in U.S. history that's ever put the maps to the voters.
But what makes
it's not only transparent, it's the most democratic.
But why would they stop after 2030?
Because the initiative ends there, and that's what we're responding to, the immediacy and the emergency in response to what Trump's about. And by the way, it's not just what he did in Texas. You saw what he had yesterday. I hope everyone paid attention.
But do you actually...
He had the Speaker of the Indiana Assembly, and he had the Senate pro tem in the Oval Office saying, "You are going next," and threatened them to move in Indiana. These guys are not screwing around.
But you don't think they'll stop after 2030?
We're doing...
Republicans.
The independent redistricting that we're putting in front of the voters.
I get in this initiative, but
period, full stop.
After that.
It's a temporary response. It needs to be a temporary response. It affirms, we are affirming support for independent redistricting, not just in California, but in the country. But we're not going to play with one hand tied behind our back. You just saw what happened. 5-4 decision. 5-4 decision on $800 million in NSF and NIH grants. The Supreme Court selling everybody out, selling Congress out. By the way, that was part of the rigged Supreme Court. Yet Gorsuch on there instead of Merrick Garland, because they don't play by the same set of rules. I'm sick and tired of Democrats being on the losing end in this country and our democracy being on the losing end. We have got to fight fire with fire.
But I understand that's in Prop 50, but you're not saying you think Republicans are going to stop.
I don't think Donald Trump wants another election. You think for a second I have 24 Trump 2028 hats. His folks keep sending me.
And you think he's going to run again?
Who spends $200 million on a ballroom at their home and then leaves the house? This is serious, guys. This is serious.
So it'll be Newsom Trump in 28.
No, this is, there's no, this guy doesn't believe in free, fair elections. He tried to wreck this country. Were you there January 6th? I think Fox was. At least they were in a lawsuit. They seem to have lost any memory of that. Shareholders didn't. I mean, he tried to light democracy on fire. He dialed for 11, almost 12,000 votes. Now he's doing it in plain sight. And people said, oh, just Trump being Trump. People actually think this guy's serious about having another election? You think he's joking about 2028? You think when he brings foreign leaders to the Oval Office and he goes to the White House store, have you seen this? Anyone? Is it just me? And he shows them the 2028 hats? He's not being serious? Wake up. You or lose your country. Again, it's not about Democrats. Or it's about all of us.
So you're absolutely convinced he's...
I'm absolutely
convinced. 2028.
You've seen it. He's tried to steal the last election. He's trying to rig it in plain sight this time. He wants to get rid of vote by mail. He's talking about eliminating voting machines he doesn't like. He's setting up the contours where he can declare a declaration of emergency for anything. Just cause means whatever he just said on Truth Social. He's running the greatest grift operation in world history. I mean, it makes some of these dictators overseas blush, the crypto. Not just the perfume. I mean, come on.
Let me ask you about a couple of your...
Wake up, everybody. Wake up.
Let me ask you about
Excuse
a couple...
Excuse me, and I know it's impolite. We have to be more calm and demure.
A couple of your own...
But I'm not calm, and I'm not going to submit myself to niceties. Not when this guy is trying to wreck our goddamn country.
So, a couple of your own experiences with him. You had this 90-minute meeting earlier this year when you went there.
Where he... showed me a painting, said, turn around. And I said, oh, there's FDR. And I'm like, oh, of course. And he goes, he said, what do you mean? I said, I know exactly what you mean. And then he went on and on about the third term. Yeah, that same meeting, 90 minutes.
Have you told that story before?
Just said it.
This was the first time?
To the extent.
So do you take notes in it? It's a scoop.
I have a good memory.
Scoop Tannity.
By the way, I had a 16-minute memory of when he alleged that he read me the Riot Act on L.A. and didn't even want to talk about L.A. before he nationalized the Guard. We took contemporaneous notes of that because I thought it was very important. And we submitted them to Congress because they've requested them. And I'm looking forward to you all reading what we discussed that night. And it won't surprise you, but it should shock you.
Can you share anything?
What he said publicly, lied to everybody, you, American people, and what he said privately, and what was really on his mind.
So you're standing, so he's showing you the FDR painting.
Yeah, well, we talked about his crypto grift as well.
What did he say about that?
He was surprised that meme coin's not even a coin. He goes, hey, you know, it's not even a coin. By the way, I'm about to come out with a coin on my Patriot site. You may want to look into that.
You're adding that?
Yeah, we're probably adding that. We've sold out of a lot of things on the Patriot site. I think we'll add a coin, maybe a Trump corruption coin or something. Yeah.
What else goes on in a meeting like that? What's in the notes?
What's in the notes? I didn't take any notes during the Oval meeting, but the notes that will be made public, Congress. They've been sent.
I know, but are you allowed to preview them?
Apparently there are no rules anymore. No, so yeah, yeah, so I'm allowed, I guess. I mean, I've already been threatened with arrest. Under what pretense do you want to arrest the governor, Mr. President? Well, he was elected. Just pause and think
So
about
what are
that.
We going to see in
Just
that?
Like he said, he's entitled to 5 seats, entitled. And I'm the one being accused of overstating that he may not be so interested in an election in a few years? I'm the one being accused of that? Has he just pardoned all the January 6th insurrectionists and is talking to us about rule of law and thought we should prosecute someone for the sandwich? I don't even know about the details of the sandwich. But that was an outrage on Fox, but not the pardoning of people that actually attacked law enforcement and police officers. Where he uses our American heroes, takes them away from their families, off the beat where they're doing important work, and leaves them in armories without enough food or water. You saw the photos on cots and mats. We're supposed to be listening to that, the spirit of patriotism. So again, wake up.
She covered a lot there, but in that meeting.
You just want
you got the
notes.
The meme
I know
coin.
What you want, Chris.
You got the FDR painting where he was alluding to.
Oh, that was a hell of a 90 minutes. And
what else?
What's interesting?
When you called, call you made after that meeting.
We followed up after that meeting.
Not with him.
Yeah.
With the first person you called in your life to describe what you had just experienced.
Well, I didn't have my cell phone, and before I saw a bunch of my staff that was wondering why we were in there for 3 hours.
And what was the?
I was with Susie Wiles for an hour and a half.
What do you tell them?
Talking
besides
about
the FDR
election.
Anecdote.
Well, I told them all. I told them a lot. Look, you know what I said in this. Let me sort of step back, but it's a specific response. I told them it was a very good meeting. I told him it's very consistent with a lot of meetings I've had with the president. Just like the phone call we had, that 16, 19-minute phone call, was unbelievably cordial. It was a great phone call. There was no friction. There was no issues. Ended incredibly collaboratively. It was a cell phone. He said, call me back anytime. I said, thank you, Mr. President. Only to wake up, you know, a few hours into the next day and read about a completely fictitious version of the conversation. Jaw totally dropped. Completely made up. I had a first term like that with him.
Yeah.
His first term. We were involved, not just me, but Governor Brown, myself, 122 plus lawsuits, but we still worked together on a number of issues. Back to open hand, not a closed fist, particularly around COVID. And I've said this, I said it very public. I said at the tarmac down in LA with the president when we did a little scrum, I said, every single thing we asked for, he delivered. He did. Every single thing we asked for, he delivered. We had an unbelievably good relationship despite all the noise. And that was my hope and expectation. That's why I went to the tarmac. And then we had a very nice conversation there. It was a little more tense at the beginning. Nice conversation, follow-up, led to the Oval Office. And it was a great meeting. It was. And I was trying to find common ground. But there's no working with Donald Trump. There's only working for him. And I will never work for Donald Trump. And you have to learn it the hard way. And I pray the UC Regents don't learn it the hard way. I hope they pay attention to what he just said 2 days ago in the Oval Office about Harvard. I hope they're paying attention to what he's doing. In all of these other instances to our CSU system, to our K-12 education system. Why we didn't initiate those 40 plus lawsuits. They're all in response to what he initiated. It's unprecedented what we are experiencing. These are dictatorial constructs, authoritarian tendencies. And if you are black or brown in this country, I feel like you probably feel like authoritarianism is already here. If you're a person of privilege and wealth, you're so fearful that you're probably more interested in a transaction, in a one-off deal, because somehow crony capitalism may be your only path.
All right.
What the hell is going on? And by the way, anyone who believes in free enterprise should be ashamed of themselves for supporting Donald Trump.
So you signed this deal with the Danish foreign minister. I want to get sort of what you're hearing from others on this.
I don't want to ruin my source there.
I was going to say, in San Francisco last week, what are they saying right now about Trump?
Well, I won't talk about the conversation with our friends from Denmark, but I can.
You got the Greenland.
We didn't talk. Notably, we did not talk. The readout was we did not talk about Greenland. I've had the privilege of meeting a lot of foreign leaders. I've had a chance.
What's the general?
They're laughing behind his back. That did not happen. I'm making this clear. Do not conflate what I just said with the meeting I had with the Denmark delegation.
It wasn't them. Other foreign leaders are laughing.
I've had dozens and dozens. Ambassadors met with him.
What are they saying?
They're laughing behind his back. He's being played everywhere. It's an embarrassment. They are. I'm just telling you. That's universal. Universal. Unless there's a deal. Unless there's a grift, unless there's a transaction. He sends his kids out before all those trips to the Middle East get the deal. Again, where's Fox primetime on that? Or where the hell are they? And we get a side deal, maybe a little bit of relief here in Vietnam, and then all of a sudden we dealt with some of their versions of CEQA that were all waived over there. I mean, what's going on in China? I mean, they're probably looking at this. I mean,
well, I was
by the way, she's loving this.
I was going to ask you about China.
That nationalization of private industries, something we're pretty good at in China. He's probably looking at Trump saying maybe he'll give him some advice after Putin gave him advice about free and fair elections.
What do you think?
Don't think there's not some deals on the side there?
With the Chinese?
Just don't think that won't be part of something. I don't know, in the crypto world, just look at the evidence, look at the facts. Look who shows up at the golf course. Look who shows up for the fundraisers. Look who needs a pardon. Come on. Why am I even having to say this? It's right there in plain sight. In plain sight. What's selling you out for the great grift?
We got a couple more. I'm going to try to shift the tone a little bit.
Thank you. I need to visit Copenhagen.
None of that was about...
I'm going away next week with my son.
Where are you going?
I'm going overseas, so you can spend days without me. For that same 9-year-old, his baptism, he's somehow convinced his parents. He's got some family. He's doing this. He may become Pope one day.
Are you going to the Vatican?
We're doing a baptism overseas. I can't share everything at peril, but a little privacy. But I'm looking forward to apparently, I think most of you are probably saying he needs it after this.
Do you think you'll get an audience with the Pope?
One of the great thrills of my life was be with the Pope at the Vatican talking about climate change and talking about criminal justice, which was something I'll never forget a year or so ago.
So from the sacred to the profane, I guess you could say. That's my transition.
I love it.
Do you personally approve the press office tweets that go out from your...
We have a kill switch.
Yeah.
So to the extent that I don't kill it, then I guess
how
I'm
many do
complicit.
You kill?
Less every day. As
are
I
you,
said, I've just thrown it
do
out.
You see a, do you see a point where you get tired of those? Like, are they going to get old?
Yeah. Look, we're iterating. It's been the cause of my life. I try to iterate. I've been doing it. That's why we did the debate against DeSantis and Fox and Sean Hannity. It's why we started showing
but
up.
No, but no Arnold debate.
Arnold debate. I visited with Arnold on this. We talked. We debated this.
Were you disappointed? Do you feel like he violated the spirit?
No, just the opposite. I completely respect his point of view and position. And by the way, I told him I share it. I just told him, you don't have the redistricting doesn't exist anywhere in this country if this guy wins and wires this.
But do you think,
I said, if you actually care about this issue, you're gonna stand up for this.
But
I reminded him, Chris, that we're actually protecting his legacy by maintaining the independent redistricting and affirming it. And so, again, I wasn't here to convince him. That's why I'm not going to have a public display of I get what you're doing. But I showed the respect because I do respect the governor. And we've worked together on a lot of other issues. We're about to do something on After School for All.
Yeah.
Worked on climate policy. And, that's...
But he hates Trump probably almost as much as you do.
Perhaps.
I don't know. After this conversation, I might reassess.
Whether
he hates him quite as much.
Yeah.
But is he being naive?
No,
with all the threats,
I'm not taking the bait on that. He's a person of judgment on this, on the basis of his experience and his advocacy.
And you
I
told
respect
him that.
That. I spent time expressing a point of view. He expressed his point of view.
Yeah.
He was respectful, and I'm going to be responsible enough to say a little more out of respect to the governor and out of respect for his very principled stance supporting what I support. Which is independent redistricting.
So
at this perilous moment, however, I believe that we need to respond to this emergency. And I think he understands that. And I think we have an understanding and good people can disagree.
Do you see this merch before it goes on the site?
You didn't ask me my favorite.
Yeah. Is it? I'll get to your favorite, but the tweets, is there a vetting process?
Yeah, reasonably. I mean, look, when
there's no kill switch?
I'm going to need some deniability eventually, so I'm going to create some space because invariably something's going to go out that may have crossed a line, and I will, of course, deny any association. And, and so I need a little bit of space.
You have a tank top on there, sort of.
Yes.
Taylor Swift inspired. What does it say?
Taylor inspires a lot of us.
Yeah. So it says Trump is not hot.
Look. This is a guy who retweeted himself on Mount Rushmore. This is a guy who retweeted himself, dare I say, as Pope.
Yeah.
This is a guy who's hawking a Trump Bible. This is a guy who's out there selling perfume and with one of the great grifts, coin.
But I want to get to the Trump is not hot. So,
this is a guy who has merchandise.
Yeah, yeah.
Selling 2028 hats.
So
this is a guy who says Trump is never wrong.
But who in politics?
This is a guy who has Hulk Hogan and others praying for.
You have those now.
Well, yes.
You have all of
them. I quite enjoy my shop. You should take, if you haven't looked at the Patriot shop, I encourage you to take a look and peruse. The Bible is sold out. And but there's a lot of new merchandise coming. And as I said, I'm really intrigued by this Trump corruption coin.
Yeah.
Which I think is coming to the shop near
you. I want to hear more. What's the countdown for that?
When I don't know. I hope it's sooner than later. Again, it's some record-breaking merchandise here. It really is. I mean, I didn't realize that this was A, so enjoyable, number one, and B, so impactful in this respect because it's serious. It's putting the mirror up to the absurdity of all of this. The fact that you have allowed this, we, including me, have allowed this to be normalized. The fact that these pundits and mouthpieces out there, these chatbots on One American News and Newsmax and, you know, all the parroting we're seeing on Fox, and there's no situational awareness as they're assaulting and attacking the integrity of my assertion that I have the right to do things in all capital and talk about big, beautiful maps and talk about Columbus would be all this. And thank you for the attention. Somehow that's offending their senses. They say it's not gubernatorial, but apparently it's presidential.
All right, so Trump is not hot. A question for you, and we can go out on this one. So it's got you got the.
By the way, I think you've finally seen some.
Who in politics?
Some photos of me that have been untouched, which is good.
I've seen
photos without my shirt. It's good to see me without any. Usually they touch things up, but those are some actual authentic photos out there.
So who in politics is hot?
Well, I think a lot of governors.
Names here.
I think the biggest problem. I'm gonna battle.
You can't do
back.
The whole group.
You wanted to go a little light. I'm gonna go serious.
That's not light.
But seriously, I'm light in this case. LIGHT. The biggest. I've been iterating with this podcast. And offending some folks' senses, because, you know, how could you, have Charlie?
Did you
Kirk
see Pete Buttigieg's remarks on?
No, but I great admiration for Pete. I'm looking forward to getting him on the podcast.
Yeah,
but good people can disagree. And they have. They've been very expressive about the merits demerits of having Newt Gingrich or, Michael Savage or some folks they may disagree with. I think it's important. I did another re-podcast this morning with another person, member of the Trump administration, former member. And I think it's important. Just do. And good people.
Who was it?
I want to announce it first. But the point of it is to make the case. Humility and grace. We don't have all the answers, but the answers are out there. Success leaves clues. There's power of emulation. Learn from people. Learn from, don't follow. I was talking to Steve Bannon. I'm not kidding. About two-thirds into it, I thought I was talking to, and don't be offended by this, and I don't mean to take, but I thought I was talking to Bernie Sanders because he was talking in populist terms. He was making a case. I actually said in the podcast, you're making a case for California's progressive taxes. He was actually making a compelling case for California's tax system. And there was a lot. It was interesting. Once you get through all the noise of why he shouldn't even be platformed, this is assault. I mean, Charlie Kirk and what he's able to do with young men and how a Democratic Party's losing young men, multicultural, multiracial, losing young men across the spectrum. It's a crisis for this party. But I've been trying to understand, and it's a long way of saying this,
yeah.
And it connects to your, is it hot or whatever.
No.
But let me sum up. That I've been on this journey, I think a lot of us have been on, Democrats, and I think others, pundits, experts of all stripes. What the hell's wrong with the Democratic Party brand? And at the core, we can unpack it, and I've seen a million theories, and I've got dozens and dozens of pages, and I've kind of distilled, was it Israel? Was it inflation? Was it interest rates? Was it incumbency? You can go down the list, all these things. Was it The View? Was it issues of culture? Was it woke? Was it all this? At the end of the day, and we can get into the issues, the merits of the issues, and where we are definitely not necessarily with the American people, the majority of American people's own performance, et cetera. But at the end of the day, to me, the essence of the challenge of the party is weakness. Weakness. And I think it was not lost on me. And I really at the core believe this. The most eloquent spokesperson that understood this decades ago was Bill Clinton after we got shellacked to one of the midterms. And you all know this quote, but it's important to be reminded of it. He said, given the choice, when he was reflecting on it, and we were all saying we need to go to Applebee's, and there was a best-selling book on that at the time, and it was sort of hillbilly elegy was coming up, and we were discovering this guy, J.D. Vance, and we were all trying to understand our way out of the wilderness. And Clinton summed it up, said, given the choice, the American people always support strong and wrong versus weak and right. And I think our party needs to wake up to that. We need to assert ourselves. Why did I open this pact 2 years ago? It wasn't for some grand, I know you guys want to write a grand ambition. It's to get us off our heels and get us back on our toes. Why did I go on Sean Hannity's show? Why did I go to that debate? Because I was sick and tired of being on the receiving end of CRT, ESG, DEI, IRS, EPA, anything with three damn letters. Somehow these guys were shape-shifting, and they were just surround sound grievance, and we were responding to that. And there was something about that was infuriating, but also forced me to sort of, recognize my own culpability in that respect. The fact that society becomes how we behave, we are our behaviors. And I said, we got to change the way we behave. And so I've been on this sort of journey of understanding. And I think what these tweets, back to what you're saying, represent, what the merchandise represents, is a desire now to be held to a higher level of accountability, to assert with more clarity and conviction a point of view, with humility and grace, sure. But that, I think, is critical for the Democratic Party right now. We have got to stand tall, authentic, but we have to stand tall, and we have to affirm our positions, and we have to use every tool at our disposal to not only assert ourselves, but to prove ourselves to the American people. Prop 50 to me represents that. Style of communication, I believe, in an iterative manner, is part of that. And I believe the Democratic Party is going to light things up in the spirit of your conversations, because I think the best days of this party are ahead of us. Anyone who's counting us out, I think, is making a worse bet than even betting on Trump's meme coins.
So you and Trump in 28.
Well, I think isn't JFK running with him again, Junior, in 2028, or maybe Epstein will come back and run with Trump. We haven't even talked about Epstein.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've kind of tiptoed up to that and talked about it on Sean Ryan. And
I don't know. I just thought it was interesting when Elon Musk tweeted out that he's in the Epstein files. 3 days later, there were no files. I just thought that was interesting.
Do you feel any responsibility as governor of California for the Elons of the, the rightward shift of a lot of
I personally
folks
don't, because as
tech?
You know, I've been accused of spending more time than I should with them. I'm pretty proud of California's regulatory system that created the incentives for someone like Elon Musk to make billions and billions of dollars.
You don't think this was part of a backlash to your time as mayor of San Francisco and then being governor, and that it's shifted some of the folks within Silicon Valley? I mean, you see these folks who have Trump's ear now.
Well, look, you're having it's a separate and above conversation that has some of its origins in crypto and the blockchain, has some of its origins with Elon specifically about an EV meeting he wasn't invited to. That has a lot of cult of personality. as much or more than anything else, and policy that also marked that that shift. But I, you know, that's for another conversation.
It's a longer,
a deeper conversation.
It's a longer conversation. If you will answer it, this will be our last one. Who in politics is hot?
Well, I mean,
you've dodged it now.
Look, I think the bench.
Trump's not.
I think the bench of Democratic governors are. I think it's a hell of a lineup.
The whole lot.
I think it's a great. Yeah, of course, you know, my wife. Yeah, well done, Jennifer. Yes.
Bailing you out.
I'm not sure she's long for politics. She's trying to stay out of this.
Is she going
to
run for something?
She's got a new documentary. It's an update of misrepresentation. By the way, I just want to say, just and we'll end on this because this is an opportunity.
Yeah.
To brag on my wife. My wife did a documentary. She did called Misrepresentation, about the mis and underrepresentation of women and girls. She followed up with a documentary that's very interesting. It was called The Mask You Live In, about masculinity. And it was 2015. And as she reminds me, she says, I was previewing what was going on with this crisis of young men and boys a decade ago. And she said, with all due respect, your party, Gavin, your party, Governor, neglected this. And the Republican Party weaponized it. And I just think that's interesting, because this issue, to me, explains more things in more ways on more days. I at the core of the why we've lost young men begins, I think, our pathway back beyond the framework of strength versus weakness. And so forgive me for elongating that point, but yes, Jen Siebel Newsom is
Jen Siebel Newsom and Democratic governors.
And I'm very proud of
how many of those governors are gonna do what you're doing.
Well, I hope more than
just
more than
West,
none.
Yeah. Did you talk to Moore before he came out?
I was hearing, you know, Archbishop today talking about faith and works.
Yeah.
You know, in relation to the tragic shooting in Minneapolis, and you got to pray that your feet move, and so I'm praying that we move our feet. And I'm praying that if we're successful, and we're going to be, because failure is not an option, this November with Proposition 50, that if he moves as he is intending to do in Indiana and Missouri and Florida and what's already taking shape in Ohio, and who knows what the hell else he may come up with, an executive order and some emergency rubric, that these governors are going to have to move. We're going to need to see other governors move in a similar direction. Democracy is at stake.
You're calling on them to...
I'm not calling on them, because that comes across as patronizing and obnoxious. These are good people. They know what right and from wrong. You've got some unbelievably eloquent people that are superstars. One of them is the president in the future, maybe two. These guys are more than capable of figuring out themselves, but I think they understand what's at stake.
Cool. Well, we'll end it on that. And thank you so much for your time today. And thank you to the audience for listening. It was fun. Thanks for dressing
you
up.
You don't seem so convinced. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, guys, very, very much.
And
thank you,
stand by for closing remarks from Politico Stephen over there.